NamNab is a podcast that deals with the grisly details of a variety of topics, including true crime cases, government cover-ups, conspiracies, and the paranormal. This content is not suitable for everyone. Viewer discretion is advised.
She was murdered.
Some minutes.
Welcome back.
This is Not a Monster, Not a Boogeyman.
I'm Naomi.
I'm Janae.
I'm Les.
And this week we have a guest.
My name's Nayeli.
Nayeli, everyone.
Yeah, she'll be here Welcome. Making comments for today's episode.
Some dumb shit.
So I do have some trigger warnings for this episode because this is going to be a rough one, guys. So this episode does deal with pedophilia, sexual assault of a minor, and molestation of a minor, as well as kidnapping and murder. So
rough one.
Today's
a really rough one. So I caution you to take a lot of time for yourself with this one, and if you can't handle it, that's completely fine. I almost couldn't handle researching it. So, sources for this will be on our blog as per usual. So with that, let's prepare ourselves.
All right.
So on July 3rd, 1961, in Richland, Washington, John and Carol Dodd welcomed their first son into the world, Wesley Allen Dodd. He would be the oldest of three children, but they were far from the caring family unit that were considered loveless at times. Growing up, Dodd never made claims of being abused or neglected in the home, but as an adult, he revealed in a diary that he had been abused emotionally and physically by his father. And that the children would witness violent fights between their parents, and that Dodd felt he was neglected more often, and the attention was given to his younger siblings instead. Hmm. He claimed that he did not remember even being told "I love you" when he was growing up, and he doesn't remember saying it to them either.
Was he different from his siblings in a sense? He was just the oldest.
He was just the oldest.
Huh. Mm.
I didn't see anything other than the parents were arguing. That's the only thing that was ever reported.
Sorry, was there a big age gap between the siblings?
Not really. I believe when he's 14, his brother is 6.
So decently.
It's a bigger gap, but it's not like he's an adult and his siblings are children.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I hear that a lot from the oldest sibling. Is that they felt less black sheep.
Yeah. Definitely. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. My sister got away with so much shit that I would have gotten my ass kicked for. So,
yeah.
A fact, yes.
I'm the youngest bringing in, and then Janae is an only child over here.
So we got the big perspectives.
Like other cases we have seen, Dodd did not have any friends at school, and he had difficulty joining social groups. And at the age of 9, Dodd realized that he was either gay or that he preferred to the boys in his neighborhood.
Okay.
So.
Mm-hmm. Everyone at the unsocial table, we're all shaking our heads classic. Even though we all have problems.
Oh my God, yes.
What does that say?
Which I imagine this also, given the time frame, probably isolated him even further from people.
What was the time frame again?
This is in the 1960s.
Ah.
So, lost my spot. Okay. His crimes began with sexual offenses at the age of 13, when he would expose himself to children on his street from his bedroom window. He was reported to the police by one of the children, but there was no repercussions for his actions. And later, his father would tell the news that he had not taken this incident seriously, as Dodd was good and a well-behaved child who did not have any drug, smoking, or alcohol problems. He had been aware of his son's actions for some time, but decided to ignore them, only addressing them in father-son talks.
So he was 13. They don't count that as sexual assault, child sexual assault, right? When he's a minor and then
that's
flashing. A minor.
Yeah.
Oh, it's flashing. So it happens. It happens frequently, and then it's just a matter. Well, not frequently, but it's common.
Minor on minor, a lot happens a lot,
happens
and it just
lot,
gets
right?
thrown under
the bus,
under the rug. Sorry,
under
and
the
it's
drug.
Minor on minor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then his dad's like, well, as long as you're not smoking pot, you've probably got a good head on your shoulders.
I know you're exposing yourself to children, but as long as you're not
that's
smoking
not weird
the devil's
at all.
Lettuce, I don't care.
Also, was he claiming to have been sexually abused as a child, or
that was
did he explain that?
Thing. I did go through a lot of stuff, and there's not a lot spoken about his earlier years. He did write about them, and I'll talk about that a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't really claim that he was ever sexually abused that I found, but there were some people that said he was.
Okay. It's not like it matters. It was just a question of curiosity.
Yeah, it's something I didn't put in because I didn't know for sure, because he...
Right.
He never directly mentions it, which not directly I wouldn't be surprised related. If he didn't. Mm-hmm. But
even if he was, it doesn't necessarily matter. It's just that kind of behavior.
Yeah. As Dodd entered high school, his crimes escalated into molestation of his younger cousins, younger brothers, and neighborhood children that he would... Or younger brother, I think he also had a younger sister, that he would babysit, as well as the children of the woman his father was dating. He would ride his bike around and search for boys, as he noticed that they would report him less often than the girls would. Which is fucked.
That's so true.
Which is fucked.
That's very that's shitty.
The fighting in the home also continued to escalate, and on Dodd's 15th birthday, his father attempted suicide, following an argument with their mother. Later that year, he would be arrested for indecent exposure and would be released by police, but with the recommendation that he receive juvenile counseling.
His dad or
his dad attempted suicide on his birthday, did not complete. And then Dodd was arrested later on for... Yeah. Yeah, this one's rough. So
the mom still lived with him, but he was still regularly cheating on her in the house?
I think he was cheating on her, and then also the abuse of the children continued on after the divorce.
Oh, God.
So it was a long-going thing. Jesus. So the parents divorced, and then the family kind of split even more. At the time, Dodd began to search out jobs that would put him closer proximity with children. So he worked for a period of time as a camp counselor.
Mm.
And there's like stories of him trying to approach children at this camp and trying to like convince them to do things, or he started to start bullying people into doing things. So like this shit's going on pretty early. Mm. In 1981, at the age of 20, he was reported to the police by two girls who he attempted to abduct but managed to get away. However, the police did not do anything, and he joined the U.S. Navy a month later.
What?
Where's our bingo cards?
Yeah.
A month later.
Yep. And it says that he joined the military to escape those charges. And I'm like, so you do you regularly let known child molesters into the
military? I mean, it probably was never reported.
Given the sexual assault rate in the U.S. Navy?
Oh, I'm going to touch on that. Mm-hmm. Like, just wait.
Mm-hmm. Actually, yes.
We're getting there.
I'm just confused. Like, were the charges dropped? Did they recant? Like, what happened? Why did nothing happen? Other than the usual suspect.
Yeah.
Great. Just that. Just the police can't do their job.
This is exactly every episode.
We're just going to let you go, and you have to receive counseling. That was usually what they went to. It was like, he spent a couple days in jail. He would spend, I think the longest period of time was 30 days in jail, 90 days in jail, something like that. And then was sent out to counseling, and then he would just disappear after his period of required counseling was up.
This is why so many of our fucking pervs on the show happened in the 60s and 80s, because everyone was like, no, you know what?
Right. Well, and I'm going to get, this does have a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel, so
that's thanks, something thank to look God. Forward to. You should crush my heart.
Well, I'll do that after. So he just joined the U.S. Navy.
God, dude. Don't tell me he has an alcohol problem.
He was assigned to the submarine base in Bangor, Washington, and continued to abuse and prey on children that lived on the base. Jesus. He offered one group of boys money to come with him to a hotel and play strip poker, but was arrested and told police that he did indeed plan to molest the boys. Because of this, the police let him go, and shortly after arrested him again when he exposed himself to another boy. And I want to say he was discharged from the Navy. This was a general discharge, not dishonorable, albeit people also supposedly get dishonorably discharged for sexual assault in the military, and yet that doesn't seem to happen either.
People never get dishonorably discharged for being gay.
Yep.
And trans. Mm-hmm. But you're not gonna dishonorably discharge a pedophile.
Yep.
Or get murdered.
Yeah.
Because they basically. Like it too.
Yeah. Or fucking tortured by their fellow fucking people.
For speaking up.
Yeah.
But, a child molester. Oh, yeah, no, that's fine. I'm sorry you didn't get away with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like,
oh, he was honest, so it's fine. It's probably fine.
Oh, my God.
He can go.
I
have to remove myself from the situation.
So when he was dishonorably discharged, he spent 19 days in jail, and the court ordered him to do counseling. A few years later, he again would be arrested for molesting a 10-year-old boy, but was given a suspended sentence and, I believe, only 30 days in jail because he pled guilty of doing so. He then went on to live with his father in Idaho and signed up for an outpatient treatment program to help him, and he claimed to be making progress. But Dodd was arrested again in 1984 for molesting a 9-year-old boy and was sentenced 10 years in prison for lewd conduct with a minor. He only served for a little under 4 months before being changed to a one year in county jail that ended up being a suspended sentence mm-hmm. on the condition that he seek further treatment.
I have two questions.
Yes.
Does anyone know when the sex offender registry law went
That's
into place?
That's going to be touched on.
Okay,
here.
Thank yeah. you. Because I'm like, they just don't communicate at all. Like,
no.
Okay.
Like, this all is right. one of the bigger crimes of being like, what the fuck were you doing? So in 1985, Dodd went back to Vancouver. And just to give you an idea of what type of monster Dodd is, he planned his whole life around having easy access to his victims. As he would call them like targets or incidents, and he would even disengage himself from them so much that he referred to them as it in his journals.
So did he go back to the people, to the children?
He went back to like a different area in Washington, but he's still preying on children in different locations.
This still happens. I just want everyone to know that.
Yeah, this hasn't.
Doesn't change. This doesn't is just change. One case.
So he moved into an apartment complex that was targeted for families with children. He worked in fast food. He drove a charity truck. And in the apartments, he repeatedly molested the children of his neighbors who were of preschool age.
Oh,
but the mother did not press charges as she feared the experience would be too traumatic for her children.
Oh, my God. Can I ask a question? Did yeah. he actually ever seek counseling? Did anyone?
He did go to the counselings, and then there was some where he had to go into, like, deeper, like, psychological tests and evaluations. And he would do them because they were court-mandated, but mm-hmm. that's all he would do. He wouldn't seek, like, he
they
wouldn't
didn't
follow through
put
after.
Any, like, restrictions
and even if it's court-dated,
on him?
You can go to your therapy session and literally just sit there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And be there and, like, get signed off for your yeah. hour.
Oh, trust me.
And
but, like,
so this is before a lot of those changes and laws were made. So
can a psychologist or therapist, like, request court-ordered, like, restrictions from
yes.
someone seeing children?
Yeah.
Maybe oh well, here's the thing though. Like, it's oh, it wouldn't fine. Be court ordered restrictions at that point. They'd be put on the sex offender registry and would not be allowed access to children at all. Like,
so the
if
sex
you're
offender
on
registry was not real at this point.
No,
what the fuck?
This was not a thing
before.
Yet.
Well, it was
letting it run rampant.
It was a thing. However, they were not under such strict requirements.
What the fuck were the requirements?
So it was like if they remembered to put you on there, they did. If not, they didn't.
Oh
they didn't bother.
God. Now you have to show up once a year, re-register, give your address, where
yeah.
do you work, all of your information. It's very different.
And then
yeah.
even then, people don't know about this.
Oh yeah.
Yep.
yeah,
yeah, yeah. And I'm gonna talk about all that here at the end because this case is very heavily tied up in that. So in 1987. Dodd tried to lure a boy into a vacant building, but the boy got away and notified the police who arrested him. They were aware of his history of sexual crimes and recommended 5 years in jail, but since he had not actually exposed himself to the boy or touched him, he was only placed on probation and told to seek psychiatric treatment. He, of course, stopped going to treatment once his probation was up and moved away from Vancouver, moving to a different location that is near David Douglas Park, which is the site that his crimes for the following years would take place in. And I say following years, it's just, this was all like within 1 year. This is all like within a couple months of each other. He just spends a very long time watching.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which is gross because I unfortunately read excerpts from his journals and don't do that. I will tell you right now, don't do that. I wish I could
God,
unread
no,
the things
read
I read.
Mm-hmm.
So...
We traumatize ourselves for this podcast. We really do.
At least people know what we're passionate about.
I have regrets sometimes, but usually that outweighs it.
I've also had regrets of listening to some of yours.
Yeah.
And then going back and reading some transcripts, I'm like, why did I do this? I've gotten like sentences in and be like,
So this park that I talked about, it was very heavily wooded and had multiple secluded trails in it. So perfect place for that. He like, when he got there, he took a walk around the park to see like what areas were secluded, what areas were away from the path that he could possibly take people to, and like what was realistic. So he like scoped this entire place out. So in these years, he would be arrested multiple times for molesting children and would spend short stints in jail receiving court-mandated therapy over and over. He had a victim count of over 50 children between the ages of 12 and 2, most being young boys. At his work, he was seen as an odd guy who kept himself, and he would stand out in the corner and watch children. They of course were like, that's fucking weird, dude. But he explained this as that he was divorced and that his infant child had died of, quote, crib death. And that was the reason for his actions.
What a fucking weirdo. Wow. That's even weirder that you make up that lie to justify it.
Yeah.
It's super strange. So wait, he doesn't have any record when he applies to, is this in Canada?
No, Vancouver? this is in Washington.
Oh, I see. I think he went to Canada for a second,
Vancouver,
right?
No,
there's a Vancouver, Washington.
Yeah, there's a Vancouver, Washington.
Oh my god, I'm stupid. Sorry. No, I was just like, what the fuck? There's no record of him doing any of this, and he can well just like
think about the time period. Police departments don't communicate.
Yeah.
At this time, like interstate, inner city, they don't communicate. Yeah, it's all right. Whose dick's bigger.
Your
game.
ID is like printed with no picture.
No actual help at all. Right.
Yeah,
to the
literally.
Citizens, basically,
that's how I mean. That's how serial killers existed in the fucking 70s and 80s, because like it was like, no, I'm gonna catch Ted Bundy. No, I'm gonna catch Ted Bundy. Right. It's like, someone just fucking catch Ted Bundy. I don't care who it is.
Who cares about that?
Yeah. Oh my god.
But that's why, because they were like, well, it has to be my catch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that's also gonna be the case here.
Scooby-Doo cops.
Well, a little bit at the beginning that's the case. So as time continued, his sexual fantasies became his sexual fantasies became more violent, and the idea of murder intrigued him. At one point, and the big trigger warning on this, he even wrote in his journal that he wanted to eat the genitals of one of his victims. A psychologist who examined him after one of his arrests felt that he met the criteria for a sexual psychopath.
You think?
This might be the most evil person we've ever covered on this show.
Yeah.
And it's crazy because he's so nonchalant about it. And then given all this fuel to flame it, you know, like he's just running amok about what the fuck, dude?
Yeah.
Ew.
So obviously everything got more concerning when he actually started writing up plans for how to kill a child. On September 4th, 1989, Dodd went to his usual park and waited for his victims, finding brothers 10-year-old William and 11-year-old Cole near. He sexually assaulted them after tying them to a tree and stabbed both of them multiple times. Dodd fled the scene, and only 15 minutes later, a teenage hiker found the bodies and called the police. Cole was found dead on site, while William died on the way to the hospital. If any of you are doing research on this, I am going to warn you to be very, very careful when doing this part of the research, because there is an excerpt from that, because Dodd puts everything very detailed into his journals. He writes out this entire scene and who he killed first and the extent of what he did. So unfortunately, I came across that, and I just wanted to warn you to not do that. Don't make my mistake. I was sad.
Yeah.
Jesus.
I literally, in stories like this, see the police department right there on the scene of the crime. Because it's like, they didn't know enough about this type of behavior. I don't even study it closely enough to know that kind of escalates.
Yeah, yep. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, violence like that is cyclical.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And each cycle, it gets more violent. Or has the potential to get more violent.
His hands are not the only ones that are dirty. If you think that he's a monster, it's like, think about all the people who knew, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I will get a little bit more into that as well at the very, very end, because there's something interesting that came up.
So to immortalize his killings, when Dodd returned home, he started scrapbooking the newspapers that had anything about his crime and the killing of the boys. And it wasn't enough that he had actually been looking for a boy. It wasn't enough that he killed somebody. Mm-hmm. He was now looking to bring someone back with him to stay in his home.
Mm. Very Dean Corll of this guy.
Yeah. So he wanted to torture this child and spend more time with him. He wanted to have, quote, slaves that he could keep and torture and perform experimental surgeries on. And so on October 29th, this is just a month after the murdering of the brothers, drove to Portland, Oregon, which is not too far right. from Washington. And found his next victims. He found another pair of brothers, 4-year-old Lee and 9-year-old Justin as Ellie. Lee was playing away from his brother, and so Dodd convinced him to follow him away from the playground of the elementary school they were playing at. And they were there. He offered to give Lee a ride back to his house, telling him that at first he tried to give the boy money, and then he was like, "Oh no! Your dad actually sent me to come get you." Mm. So.
Oh, that makes me so. But pissed the thing off. Is,
he was very good at talking to children.
Oh, I'm
and
sure.
so they would trust him and go devil. With him, and he'd be like. This boy that in particular, he was like, "Well, I'm very worried. I want to go back with my brother." And he was like, "Your brother's having fun without you. Don't worry. You can come with me. It's safe." And it was like, "Oh, I hate that. You're fucking awful." So he took him into his car and started driving the opposite direction of Lee's home and took him back to Washington, where no one seemed to notice that he had just picked up this boy.
Without the brother?
Yeah, the brother ended up going home and being like, "I don't know where my brother is." And he was like,
"Shit."
Like, by the time I think they got back to his apartment, the father was calling the police. So they tried to move very quickly on this one. And there's also a few things put out about what the father was saying to the news, being like, "If it's somebody that just picked him up because maybe you wanted a child, I would really appreciate, like, you can just drop him off at a fucking grocery store and I won't report because I just want my son back." Because they couldn't comprehend that something bad would happen to a 4-year-old.
Right.
Or someone wanted to do something bad to a 4-year-old.
I think that's a big mentality that people share. They think, "Oh, I would never do that." It's like, yeah, you would never do that because these people are not like you and I.
Right. Yeah.
They think like animals and hunters.
Yep. So he kept Lee captive in his home, took pictures of the abuse he inflicted on the boy, and then took the boy to McDonald's and Kmart, where he bought him a toy before returning to the home to continue the abuse. He kept Lee overnight and recapped all of it in detail in his diary. Dodd intended to release Lee, but realized that the boy was more of a risk alive, and so he strangled him to death.
He intended to release him?
Yeah. Because
this guy is he's not unlike he's anyone he's got cannibalism in there, and then there was one other thing you touched on that we were like, "What the fuck? Oh my god,
the medical experimenting thing." Like, what?
Where did that come from?
Where the fuck he got? There's another thing that comes up that I didn't include in here because
it's
like the time frame of this. He also says that he was working with Satan to get the children, and that he would ask Satan to bring to him a certain type of child, and that
it's fucking satanic panic.
And then when he later is going to die, he's like, "Well, I found God and Jesus, and I know now that my actions are bad." But the thing is, he knows what he's doing is wrong. Oh, he's just trying to, and I'm gonna leave this for later because I get into a thing about this. But
and the Scooby-Doo cops are like, "Yes,
yeah, that's course. Fine." So after he strangled Lee to death, he strung him up in his closet and took more pictures of him. Then went to work as usual before coming back, putting the boy in a trash bag and dumping him near Vancouver Lake. So there doesn't really give a shit about what the fuck's going on around him.
The whole traveling from state to state just gives me so anxiety, dude. Like,
we can never catch these people.
Yeah. But a child, what are you telling this child?
Right?
You know, like this whole fucking ride.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and the child has no idea. Of course they have no idea. But they're fucking terrified.
To a certain extent, right?
Oh,
yeah.
I mean,
you have to keep manipulating them to keep them there.
To keep them. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And
well, and he said that that was the reason for McDonald's and Kmart was he was just trying to like get him to stay calm.
It's like when your abusive boyfriend buys you flowers.
Exactly.
After he punches you in the face.
Yes. God, poor baby dude. No.
So he dumped the body and then proceeded to burn all of Lee's clothes except for his underwear that he kept in a suitcase.
Disgusting. Nasty.
Yeah. This guy is fucking disgusting. But Lee's body was found one day later by hunters. And now, along with the murders of the two boys the month earlier, they now were starting the manhunt for a killer. But there were no leads and nothing other than composite sketches provided by witnesses in Oregon. Because he had spent 2 days there, and I think he tried to abduct another child, but failed. Mm. So Dr. Ronald Turco prepared a psychological profile on the killer. He would be 25 to 35 years old, kicked out of the military if he served, would be a loner, and probably kept photos of his victims, a diary of his offenses, including clipped articles and child pornography. The killer probably chose boys because he saw girls as, quote, defective. This accurately described Dodd.
Yeah.
Really, because you guys have caught him multiple times. Right. You literally have had him in there. No, I would think. And then Richard Ramirez happens and is like, that's not me. And the police are like, okay.
Have a good day.
Bye.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, I joke, but I know. I know.
Joke. This sucks.
It's not funny because it literally happens.
It's like if you don't laugh, you'll cry.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Dodd lay low in his apartment while making plans for his next child abduction and began constructing a torture rack to use on his next victim that would never be used, thankfully, due to the vigilance of bystanders and one man who would not idly stand by.
Yes!
Citizens arrest!
Bystander intervention.
Finally! Mm.
Yes. The following month, Dodd made two attempts to kidnap young boys. The first boy denied his advances, so Dodd fled, and just a few days later, he visited the New Liberty Theater and attempted to abduct 6-year-old James Kirk from the bathroom, but the boy put up a fight, screaming and crying as Dodd carried him through the lobby of the theater. This drew the attention of staff, who found the situation odd, even though Dodd was trying to calm the boy down. They had seen their fair share of tantrums, but the boy's screams were different, and so they pursued. Once outside the theater, Dodd was scrambling to get the boy in the car, but he broke away and ran to the two people pursuing them, crying to them and saying that the man was going to hurt him.
Hey there, monsters of boogeyman. Do you love our creepy, weird content? If you do, we invite you to grab a drink with the podcast Mystified. Mystified covers all sorts of creepy and strange things, and usually in drunken conversation. It's a lot of fun. We invite you to listen to them on all platforms that you find your podcasts, and follow them on Instagram at Mystified_pod. They also have a Facebook group called Mystified Podcast Discussion Group. We love them, and I think you will too.
Dodd fled the scene as the two staff brought the boy back into the theater, and a man named William Ray Graves, who was the boyfriend of the boy's mother, quickly came into the lobby, and the staff told him how the boy had nearly been abducted. He took the direction that the man was last seen going and stormed out of the theater after him. Luckily, Dodd's car broke down a few blocks from the theater to give the police more time. William offered to help the man start his car. When he felt he had a chance, he caught the man by surprise and put him in a headlock before dragging his ass back to the theater to be arrested.
Yes, yes, I love this person.
Dude. Yes.
Whoa, you would think that they would be on edge about that. I wish they would tell us more, you know?
Well, and here's this. James Kirk had known to make a scene since his mother had heard about the three murders and taught his son to scream, bite, kick, and to get away from someone, which is what saved him. And when Dodd followed him out, because Dodd went and watched a family. That's what he would do. He would go to theaters and watch family movies and wait for kids to leave without their parents' supervision, so he could get them. But that's what saved him, was listening to his mother. Local police contacted the Portland, Oregon police team that were investigating the death of Lee Azeli so they could question Dodd. Detectives questioned him for 3 days since he denied all involvement in the murders and claimed that he loved children and would do no such thing until Dodd was worn down and confessed the murders of Liazelli, Colt Near, and William Near, as well as directing police to where they could find his manuscripts of the crimes and photographs. With the police... With this, the police were able to secure a search warrant for his home and found the evidence of his crimes, along with the torture rack that they found, his scrapbook of news clippings about the crimes, briefcase with Lee's underwear, a photo album with the pictures taken of Lee's torture and postmortem. This photo album also had cutouts of children from store and newspaper advertisements for underwear. Apparently, there are also a few like cutouts of like baby Jesus.
Fuck.
Yeah. I think they also found like a copy of the New Testament, and inside he had written "Satan Lives."
For Edge. Fucking edgy little douchebag. God.
So
these men are so predictable. It's so sad how predictable they are.
Finally, they found Dodd's diary that detailed every crime he had committed. He wrote that he had started crimes at the age of 13 and had actually abused up to 175 children of both sexes over a period of 15 years. There are some other accounts that say he claimed up to 250 victims, but you know,
it would be probably more accurate.
Yeah,
13 years, and he was arrested 15 around years. Oh, 15. Oh, he had been killing for 15 years.
He had been assaulting children for 15 years, and he started at the age of 13.
Oh my God, dude, that's a lot of time you have on your hands.
Yeah,
250 would be about.
Yeah,
right.
So during his trial, the prosecution read excerpts of Dodd's diary to the courtroom and displayed photos of Liazelli. The defense did not bring any witnesses or present any evidence to prove Dodd's innocence, instead only suggested that Dodd must be legally insane to have written such things. Prosecutors asked for the death sentence, as did the jury. Dodd was charged with aggravated first-degree murder of each of the boys in addition to an intent to kidnap, and he originally pleaded not guilty, but later changed his plea to guilty of all charges. After saying that it would be pointless to defend himself after the system had failed repeatedly to stop him in the past and for his earlier crimes. He also agreed with the prosecutor and jury that he would like to die, explaining that, quote, he didn't offer any mitigating evidence during the penalty phase because in his mind that was just an excuse and he didn't want to make any excuses. Dodd told the court, I do not blame the criminal justice system for anything, but the system does not work, and I can tell them why. he said, it doesn't really matter why the crime happened. It should be punished to the full extent of the law, as should all sex offenders and murderers. Dodd says that if his death would bring relief to the victims' families, then he should die as soon as possible, even suggesting that it be by hanging. He was ruled guilty in 1990, but the means that Dodd requested that the means by which he would be executed actually caused a controversy that possibly could have put off his execution. The American Civil Liberties Union filed a lawsuit that hanging violated the Eighth Amendment and the U.S. Constitution, yeah, seeing it as a cruel and unusual punishment.
Oh, you see that as a cruel...
This lawsuit made it to the Supreme Court, but was ultimately blocked as it had been Dodd's own decision to be executed by hanging. He was executed just 4 years after he was found guilty, and he did not make any attempts to appeal as he felt he was uncontrollable and would kill again if he was released.
Quote, he was always honest with him.
Yeah.
He always brought himself in and said.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It kind of brings that question of, like, was he trying to get caught? But there's also the other part of it is, like, he got to a point where he didn't care if he was caught.
I think he was just enjoying that they could doing literally like that he thing. The more time. Power they get from like going up and being like, look, I did this.
Yeah.
Are you going to do anything? And then they get away with it. It's just like more fuel to their he feels so powerful, which is
it's like an invincibility complex.
It is. Almost. Yeah. And you his know? Stupid little high horse spiel about, oh, if the family like, fuck you.
Yeah.
You fucking dick. Well, you're not God, dude.
His quote from this time frame was, I must be executed before I have an opportunity to escape or kill somebody else. If I do escape, I promise you I will kill and rape again, and I will enjoy every minute of
this
it.
This fucking dude acts like he's not responsible for any of these fucking actions. Are you kidding me right now?
Yep.
Well, if I get out, I'll do it again, so you should kill me. I'm making you fucking responsible for this. He's gaslighting people in the fucking trial.
Yeah.
Yep. Sorry.
Yeah.
What?
He checks all the abuse boxes. Yeah.
But also, he felt the death would relieve him of the guilt he had for the murders.
Aww. He did not have guilt. He just didn't want to fucking spend his life in prison.
Because
then you're no longer God, huh? You don't have control over anything you do.
There's something that comes up with that I will bring up as well, which is why they pushed for execution.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. So it would seem that he regretted or was pretending to regret his actions, and earlier during his trial, he even created a pamphlet for parents on how to protect their children from child molesters like him. This is something I don't believe, because if you read some of the shit this man put in his journals, it's fucking disgusting and brutal. And he writes about how easy it is to manipulate the law and not get caught. I agree with the idea that he was using this all as a means to speak to the media and get attention so he could present himself as an expert on molesting children, as it turned him on to speak about. And even when he was admitting his crimes to the investigators, it made the investigators uncomfortable with the level of detail he was sharing and how excited he was getting retelling his crimes. And the reason they pushed for execution was that they were like, look at what he does in his free time. He sits here and imagines ways that he can hurt children, how ways he would do things like molest children, all these things. If we let him rot in prison, what do you think he's going to do in his free time? It's not going to change anything. So we should kill him.
And I hear that. And also, he soul murdered between 175 and 250 children. He can think about that for the rest of his fucking life then.
Or even assault them.
All right. You know, like this. That's what I mean, though. Like, sexual violence is murder. It's murder in a different way. A person can never get themselves back after that.
Yeah.
So it's the same thing to me. And, like, it just pisses me off that, like, he's using this to do that. Like, it just makes me.
It's frustrating. Crazy.
Or that they give him what he wants.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Because I almost feel like they don't have the willpower not to listen, or they don't have control over the prisoners. They feel like they're powerless, and it just shows that you are. They have full control over the system. They know how to manipulate. They're part of the system.
Right.
The same people are in the system.
Mm-hmm.
It was 30 years ago. You're right. It is murder.
Right. It was 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He only got caught because he let himself. Literally, like he did, and he was escalating, had every opportunity. That's what's so important to me that people know, is like that behavior, to identify it early on is very important, because it does escalate.
Well, and I lost my place immediately. So the date that the execution was to take place, there were actually protesters outside the prison for the reason of the lawsuit. But the state gave him the choice again if he wanted lethal injection or hanging. He chose hanging, as he felt it would be most suiting, since that's how he had killed Lee.
That's fucking gross.
Why would they give him that?
Getting off on that. He was getting off on that. I guarantee you.
And they're just like, sure, you
let
control
me give
us.
It to you.
Yeah, sure.
Give you everything
we'll
you
pick.
Want.
You can pick.
Oh my god, this fucking shit, dude.
This would be America's most recent hanging execution since 1965 in Kansas. Witnesses and there was like a few witnesses and media people there. They later reported that he had died quickly, but his neck had not broken as it usually does in this form of execution. Instead, he suffocated for 3 minutes and was pronounced dead on 12:05 a.m. on January 5th, 1993.
He paints himself as a martyr this entire fucking time.
He does.
And for
does.
What
a hero.
Cause? Pedophilia, bro? Wrong cause to die on.
The frustrating thing was they treated this entire thing as like, it was a quote, sick fetish. And I'm like, this isn't a fetish.
Pedophilia
isn't a fetish.
Rape is all about power play. Let's not forget that guy's small dick energy. Like he takes the cake.
And and like, even if he were to, you know, sit there and like think about his thoughts and what he did, it will never make up for the time every single person has to do to not recover, right? But yeah. just get back Live. To themselves.
Yeah, just survive. To fucking just survive fucking have normally.
A peace of mind. Yes. Yeah, you are right, Nace. That it was murder.
Yeah.
Well, and like we don't treat it that way at all.
No, we don't treat it that way. I was almost afraid that's why I thought I should ask because I was like, was it assault or was it murder? Did he murder all of them? Because it's like, for me to think of each and every one of those people's dying is so hard.
Yeah,
but it's true.
Yeah, I mean, it kills someone's spirit. That kills your spirit.
It really does. It
robs you from living. Yes, it's exactly like murder.
So, and then the worst part is like you just pretty much made someone the living dead.
Yeah,
right.
And they have to come to grips
they're
with
like,
that.
Oh, right. there's no. There's
they exactly. have to work on it. This person, right. never person has to work
and
on it.
Like, oh, death
just
does not
three people.
Fucking
it's like, no.
Help.
What about all those other people? Those other children he harmed all these years.
Yeah, who and may never get themselves back.
Yeah,
you know,
and they were all within his community. They were family.
Did people actually think he felt guilty? I don't think he ever felt guilty.
I didn't. I didn't see anything about
remorse.
Anyone's opinions during that. I think the biggest opinion was just the death penalty. But people were outraged.
They gave him his own like celebrity show.
Oh, they sure did.
Well, do you think he did get interviews with like CNN and with different
I'm sure
things
they
because
did.
They were.
Yeah.
He was like, "Oh, this is how to protect your children from people like me," and they were giving him airtime.
Oh my God.
And then he was like. He loved talking to the media, so he would call into radio shows and all this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And it got to the point where the judge had to almost put a restriction on his contact with the outside world because of the fact that he was hyping himself up.
Exactly. Yeah, he was living the life. Mm-hmm. He was like,
do you think there should be some other form of, like, punishment for these types of people?
The therapy, like, a way to do therapy where it's, like, you want justice for the actions that were taken against you. And this is mainly used with, like, childhood trauma, like, you know, your infant self or your child self wants justice for what has taken
how
place.
Would that look,
but know? Like the thing is that looks very, very different because the professional that I heard this from was mentioning that, you know, she had dealt with someone who was forced dog food by their father. And she was like, well, the justice I would imagine would be like having your father eat like dog food from a bowl on the floor. And he's like,
that
why the fuck would
better.
I want that?
Yeah,
because she had assumed what her client wanted. And her client was like, no, I just want him to make me a fucking sandwich.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
that's all I want. And that justice looks different for everybody.
Wow.
But like, I know personally that is also very healing is like you get to decide what your justice is.
Yes.
And that is,
maybe
that is the basis
all
of
it should
that therapy.
Be is to literally stop giving the fucking voice to the asshole murderer and start fucking giving the voice to the victims. Nobody wants to hear from the victims for some reason.
Mm-hmm. But thankfully, as we're talking about all this, there was some good that came from this case. It was around the time of Dodd's crimes that there was another man who was preying on children and he was being tried for attacking a boy pretty violently. A group referred to as the Tennis Shoe Brigade made up of concerned citizens pushed for a systematic reform of how pedophiles and sexual predators were processed. Since, like Dodd, there had been little attempt to detain and more severely punish the man prior to his most brutal and recent attack. They determined that there should be longer sentences for sexual predators, a stop to early release and mandatory treatment, and more medical compensation for the victims. They also called for a mandatory registration of all sex offenders. When Dodd's case came to light, he became the new symbol for what they were like going for. Because the first guy was just like, we should do something about this, and this guy became the spearhead for that movement.
Mm-hmm.
So when Dodd's came to life, he became their symbol and he of how the system had failed. And why reform was needed. Though the police had known that he had a history of molestation, they did not know that he lived near the park where the near brothers had been found. And his name was on no roster of sexual offenders for that area of Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Due to this group's persistence and their with their reform in Washington, the state reformed their laws and required that sexual offenders register with the local police. That the public must be notified when an offender is released from prison or jail. Victims are notified in advance that their attacker is due for release. Release due to fewer early releases and longer sentences, as well as more funds for victim services and offender rehabilitation. This pushes other states to reform and caused California's Megan's Law that allows for the public to know when a child molester is in their community.
And I'm actually going to talk about Megan's Law at some point. Cool. Like, it's on my radar. So
cool. There we go. Mm-hmm. So in 2016, there was an odd quasi update to this when Dodd's younger brother, Gregory, who was also assaulted by Dodd when they were children, was arrested for attempting to sexually abuse a 13-year-old girl. He was charged with 4 years and 3 months in prison for attempting to contact a girl online for sexual favors who was actually an undercover agent. He describes that he has to, quote, repress urges he has for his grandchildren and that he had sexual interactions with teenagers when he was in the military. Ugh. So that just brings up a few things for me, because now it's two people within the same family.
Right.
So do with that information what you will, but that is what I have for you on Mr. Dodd.
Jesus.
This is a hard one, and I'm sorry, but, like, fuck this guy.
It's important.
No, this is an important one.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. No, it brings up a lot for me, too, after you said that, like, intergenerational trauma.
Yep.
So. I don't have a happy note to end on.
Come back next week.
Yeah. If you're not already, follow us on Instagram, Not a Boogeyman.
Come to our website, namnab.com, to see the blog posts and the links to all of our sources, and you can also reach all of our podcasts there.
Mm-hmm. And send us an email if you have a story for us or whatever.
Yeah.
Not a monster, not a boogeyman at gmail.com.
Yep.
We'll see you next week. Thank you for coming, Nayeli.
Thank you.
Hanging out. Yeah. Come back. Bye.